We start with Gary Chambers. The last 4.5 years, he has developed quite a following with the Rouge Collection, and yesterday he was one of 6 members of the community to meet with the Justice Department after the press conference. Today's headline in The Advocate, insufficient evidence. Prosecutors say investigation couldn't prove officers acted unreasonably. Gary Chambers, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure to talk with you. And as I stated, you met with the Justice Department officials yesterday after the press conference. What happened?
The DOJ brought in 6 community leaders, a representative from Together Baton Rouge, someone else from the faith community, 2 other activists, as well as someone from the State Office of the Urban League, and pretty much gave us a play-by-play of how they got to their decision and their personal thoughts on this case. They read the transcripts to us of some of the activities that happened between specifically Officer Salamone and Alton Sterling. And Jim, for someone who's been abreast of this situation from the very beginning of it, the new information that they have revealed to us is extremely disturbing and should be brought into question. And I believe that Jeff Landry has an opportunity here to bring some sort of justice to the Sterling family regarding this case of Alton Sterling.
Well, throughout the 10 months, the officers, for the most part, have been lumped together. But it is apparent that they acted wildly differently while seeing essentially the same thing. And you're pointing an accusing finger at one of the officers. What have you learned in the last 24 hours that you did not know before?
Specifically, that Howie Lake gets out of the car before Blaine Salamone. Howie Lake walks up to Mr. Sterling, tells him to place his hands on the car. They move forward in the conversation. Sterling is beginning to comply, and Salamone gets out of his car, literally gets out and comes out on 10, as my generation would say. And he pulls his weapon out, puts it to Sterling's head, and says, I have a direct quote, don't effing move or I'll shoot your effing head, using the B word at the end of that.
We can say that.
That is not acceptable behavior for any law enforcement officer to draw their weapon, place it at someone's head, and tell them, I'll shoot you in the head, B. You know, it's disturbing. You know, it speaks to the mindset of Salamone. It speaks to poor policing. It speaks to just an individual who should not be number one on paid leave in the Baton Rouge Police Department, because he's clearly broken policy. Number two, someone who clearly went beyond de-escalating a situation and probably put both him and Officer Lake's life in jeopardy by how he handled the situation, escalating it in such a manner. Also, something that is key, Officer Lake never fires his weapon. He used his taser. He had physical contact with Alton Sterling. But Officer Lake never fired his weapon. Only one officer is a shooter here. He shoots Alton Sterling 3 times in the chest and 3 times in the back. The guy seems like he went out there intended to shoot somebody. Now, what any lawyer would tell you, and personally, myself from day one, never expected the Department of Justice to find that they violated Alton Sterling's civil rights, because the burden of proof for a civil rights investigation is extremely high. It is the bar. It is as high as you can get. State prosecution is much easier to prove, much easier to try in a court of law, and prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the actions of this officer were at bare minimum negligent homicide, and maybe worst case scenario manslaughter. And so we need to seriously be having a conversation. Do we want to protect the image of Blaine Salamone, or are we going to defend the integrity of the Baton Rouge Police Department and deal with a bad apple?
Now, these quotes that you're saying that Salamone stated on that night, where are you getting these? Did the Justice Department tell you this?
The Justice Department, the acting U.S. Attorney for the Middle District of Louisiana, and the entire investigation team, they read this from the transcript. I wrote it as we were sitting there. I asked the Justice Department, why are you telling us this? And their answer was, we want to be transparent with the community because eventually this video is going to come out. And we want to make sure that people know that we do not think that this is okay.
Now, despite this, the Justice Department opted not to press charges against either officer, including Salamone. Are you disappointed in that?
I believe that the burden of proof was the issue with the Justice Department. I believe that if there were more tools in their arsenal, that they would have used them. But because of the federal laws, Congress only, and they, these are their words, Congress gives them the power to proceed for civil rights violations. And the burden of proof, this does not meet their burden of proof. But it does not mean, exact quote, that what they saw was not troubling, what they saw was not negligent, what they saw was not a problem. It just did not meet their burden of proof.
The district attorney recused himself, stating his close relationship with the Salamone family. He has been both praised and criticized for this. Your thoughts about the move that Hiller Moore made in the original few days after the death of Mr. Sterling?
I think if Hiller Moore saw that video, listened to that audio, and knew this is what happened, and recused himself, that he should not be the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish, because the job of the district attorney is to prosecute people who break the law, regardless if they are a friend or foe, period. End of discussion. I think if Hiller Moore saw that video, heard that audio, if Hiller Moore saw Blaine Salamone pull a gun out and put it to Alton Sterling's head and say, I will shoot you, bitch, that is a problem. That is a problem if Hiller Moore is still in office when re-election comes up, in my opinion.
877.
And I like Hiller.
Well, yeah, I know you've praised him in the past, and this appears to have been the proverbial no-win situation, but he didn't prosecute, and as I stated, some people praised him, others criticized him, and now we have this revelation by the Justice Department, and now there is the option for Attorney General Jeff Landry to do it, and if he prosecutes, then will you be satisfied then?
I think that if Jeff Landry prosecutes we are looking for a conviction. But if Jeff Landry takes this to court and files the charges that he believes can get a conviction for Blaine Salamone, I do believe that that is a form of justice.
877-217-5757. Your local number is 297-5633, and the email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. We're going to spend a few more minutes with Gary Chambers of the Rouge Collection, and he was one of six people to meet with the U.S. Justice Department yesterday, community leaders, after the announcement. How did they go about deciding who was going to be in that meeting, Gary?
We asked them that, and there's a lady that works for the DOJ by the name of Cynthia Taylor, who has kind of been on the ground in Baton Rouge for the last 10 months off and on. Forgive me, I can't remember the division of the Department of Justice that she works for, but they basically help communities heal after incidents like this. And she's been on the ground dealing with certain individuals for the last 10 months, and she's also who helped select who got in the room with Attorney General Lynch when she came to Baton Rouge after the officers were killed in July. And Cynthia Taylor and her team pulled together the six of us. I don't know their rationale behind it other than what Cynthia has seen over the last 10 months as people who can convey the thoughts of the room to the community, but also people who can help move forward for this community with the DOJ.
Kwaku in Eden Park. You are on the air with Gary Chambers of the Rouge Collection. Hi, Kwaku.
Yes, good morning, Gary. Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Baton Rouge. I just want to briefly give a different take. I'm happy to say that I'm from Baton Rouge, went right there to Greenville, and finished from Capital High School. But when we put the police execution of black men in a historical context, and I feel the pain of the Sterling family, and I feel the pain of the community, but I expect nothing but a whitewash from the state police, and I expect the same from our new attorney general. I'm saying, in essence, that what we have is procedural due process. In other words, there's always a lynching after the so-called fair trial. And I hate to sound pessimistic and negative, but I'm not. I'm quite optimistic. But I don't expect anything to come from this Baton Rouge situation, because I've seen police killings and killings and killings, and they always find a way to let the police off. And I feel absolutely certain, unless there's a nonviolent uprising in this case, this will be the case then. Thank you for listening to my comment.
All right. Thank you, Kwaku. Gary, would you respond?
I think that the brother's sentiment is the sentiments of thousands of people in this community and this country. We've seen clear, open-cut cases where there's always a loophole when a cop is involved. A 15-year-old young man in Dallas was shot by a cop the other day, shot in the forehead. This is a straight-A student who has never had any disciplinary problems in school. He's at a party with some friends. They were leaving. The cops were called. The cop said that the vehicle was backing up into him. It wasn't, as they found out. The cop gets fired, but he's not charged with murder. And so there's always a justification where a cop gets to say that I felt threatened for my life. And so that's that thin line that allows them to escape justice. When, Jim, if you or I go out and shoot somebody today and we say that we felt threatened for our lives, our reputations are ruined, our careers are ruined, and we're going to jail, and then we have to prove ourselves innocent. You know, we don't get all of these protections. And so I believe with the absence of accountability within police departments, it breeds an environment where we continue to have these issues. And there is a strong mistrust between the African-American community and the judicial system, as well as police departments. And this is not stuff that people are making up because we just don't like white people or we just don't like the police department. There are serious biases that exist within our policing, and there's too much data to speak to it. And we should be looking at this and saying, you know what, we're going to change this, because at the end of the day, if we're really one Baton Rouge, if we're really a United States of America, then we should not be accepting the fact that segments of our community have a huge mistrust for the departments that they pay to protect and serve them.
Brandon in downtown Baton Rouge. Brandon, good morning. You're on the air with Gary Chambers.
Hey, good morning, Gary. Good morning, Jim. I just wanted to briefly address a few points, primarily the recusal about Hiller Moore, the of course, district attorney of East Baton Rouge Parish. By the way, I'm an attorney here in Baton Rouge. I'd start with saying I think what's absolutely undisputed, no matter which side of the argument you fall on, is that a tragedy occurred in this incident. You have an individual who lost his life, and no matter how you slice it, excuse me, that's a tragedy. So I won't really get into that. That's a very long conversation. I think your show will flesh that out with a number of callers on that issue. As Gary noted, I completely agree. You got to pay attention to the details with regard to the federal investigation and what the Department of Justice ultimately resolved. Is that there? What the burden, the extremely high federal burden, in a federal civil rights violation case could not be met. It doesn't mean you can't take away from that that there weren't issues or there weren't problems. Secondly, as Gary noted properly, the state attorney general has a different burden of proof, which may or may not be able to be met. But that is a completely separate prosecution and burden of proof, separate and apart from the federal prosecution. Lastly, what I wanted to address, that I respectfully disagree with Gary on, is that in this instance, the fact that Hiller Moore recused himself from it is actually perfectly proper procedure and protocol, in the sense that this is a extremely high-profile case. It's extremely sensitive. It involves the community, racial issues, things of that nature. What judges, district attorneys, prosecutors alike are advised to do in situations like this is that if there's any potential compromise, if there's any going to be any allegation that he was close to, had previous history, past dealings, affinities, affiliations, et cetera, with the Salamone family, anything that could potentially jeopardize or call into question his fair-mindedness and neutrality in prosecuting this case, that could potentially jeopardize the entire situation. And so typically what judges and or DAs do is, especially in high-profile situations where the integrity is of the utmost importance, the absolute utmost importance, they say, I'm going to go ahead and put this to the higher level, the state attorney general's office, to go ahead and prosecute this, because even if I can potentially fair-mindedly prosecute this and check out of any personal affiliations or prejudices or what have you, it still may not pass the smell test. There still may be room for individuals to make certain allegations that, you know, I had bias or this or that. So that was really, and I'll take my call off the air, but that was the main point I wanted to make. I respectfully disagree in the sense that I think what Hiller did was exactly proper, which is to say, because I don't want any sort of optics or sort of image to look like potentially that I had a close relationship with Officer Salamone, I'm going to go ahead and get out of the whole thing and pass it, the baton to a higher level, the state attorney general's office, and allow them to make the decision whether or not to prosecute. Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you, Brandon. Gary?
I think that there is some merit to some of what my brother just said. My concerns with Hiller are in the fact that he's seen this information and had no comment towards what justice should look like in this. And we, the taxpayers of this community, elected Hiller. And so for me, that is a problem. And to not, what's troubling, and I say this also with the DOJ, is they will say all of the reasons why an officer is exonerated in a situation publicly, but they will not say all of the reasons why this is wrong publicly.
All right. We want to try to get one more caller in for Gary, who's been waiting a while. Jay in East Baton Rouge. Jay, good morning. You're on WRKF with Gary Chambers.
Morning, Gravy. Do you feel that you'll be able to exploit this tragedy enough to be able to move out of your mother's basement?
All right. That was unnecessary. But passions are high. Gary, you have been on the forefront of this since it happened. July 5th, how did you find out about Sterling's death?
I saw an advocate update on my phone. I was having a meeting that morning with Rolf McCollister and Raymond Jetson. Of all people, Rolf and I were getting together to have a dialogue with each other, and an advocate update came on my phone. We were right down the street. I left that meeting and went to the store and talked to Abdul, and I was there with Maya Liu, who was with the advocate, is now with the L.A. Times, and she and I were talking about this situation with Abdul and just realized that it was extremely disturbing what was happening in our community. And we knew that this was going to be a big deal, and just wanted to get as much truth out there before the story began to get a life of its own as it has.
Well, we thank you for joining us.